B. Cooper, won't you please come back? We're looking for you high and low. Cause leaving ain't polite in the middle of the night. D.B. Cooper, where did you go?
The 50th anniversary of the infamous D.B. Cooper hijacking is coming up this Thanksgiving Eve, but our resident historian Felix Bunnell isn't going to wait. He's already on the story in search of what traces of the crime might still remain at the Portland and Seattle airports. Felix is brought to us by Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Those airports have been completely remodeled since then. What traces could still remain of the airports?
You would think that. Of course, there's also the traces of imagination that I like to focus a lot of my stories on, since so much of what I talk about doesn't exist anymore, Dave. quick refresher for those who don't know, D.B. Cooper, unknown hijacker who got on a Northwest Airlines 727 in Portland, afternoon of November 24th, 1971. That was Thanksgiving Eve. On the way to Seattle, he told a flight attendant he had a bomb. They landed at SeaTac. He collected $200,000 in cash and four parachutes and released the 35 passengers. The plane took off again and headed south, and somewhere over southwest Washington, Cooper jumped out and was never seen ever again. Now, there have been so many theories about who D.B. Cooper really was. You know, we talked with a guy recently on this show who's searching for money down along the Columbia River. I don't have any theories. In fact, I'm pretty tired of theories. So I wanted to visit Portland International Airport and SeaTac, because those are the only two places where we know for sure D.B. Cooper actually was, and see what might remain from a historical perspective from 50 years ago. I met up with Port of Portland spokesperson Kama Simons. She dug up some old maps and aerial photos of the Portland Airport from 1971.
So this is the terminal roadway that comes up here in front, and you can almost see there was a little bit of parking right in front. Obviously not something we do now. But then you enter the building, and this was the ticket lobby wall. So back in the day, you could come in and buy a ticket here.
Yeah, and that's exactly what D.B. Cooper did. Nobody knows how he got to the Portland airport 50 years ago, but he did pay $20 cash for his ticket to Seattle, and he walked to the gate, you know, with no security screening between him and the airplane. And Portland airport, it's not a huge airport nowadays, but the black and white photos and of 1971, it was much, much smaller. You could just literally park right in front. Now, it's no stretch to say that the hijacking is a significant cultural moment in Northwest history and really American history. And that got me wondering, since Portland prides itself on being famously weird, is it weird enough to have a historic plaque for D.B. Cooper?
There's not a plaque, no.
What about having a plaque or some kind of a...
You know, I think it's one of those, it is, a lot, there's a lot of aviation myth and lore around it. It's one of those cases that, you know, hasn't been solved. And I think that's what keeps the intrigue alive, like, we don't know, and there's lots of suppositions, there's lots of theories, there's lots of different pieces of information, but ultimately, there's still a lot of questions out there. To that end, he's still a criminal. He did something illegal. So I think we would be more likely to celebrate some of the amazing aviation pioneers.
Yeah, and they do have, there's apparently a bar in the works that will honor women aviation pioneers of the Portland area. Now, maybe I'm used to trekking to the North Satellite at SeaTac by the escalators and the subway ride, but from the ticketing area at Portland International, where D.B. Cooper bought his ticket, it was an incredibly short walk to the actual spot where he and the other passengers boarded Northwest Airlines Flight 305. Just a few hundred yards. I mean, it just struck me, because I think of airports as these huge places. It was really a tiny place back in 1971.
What we're looking at here is a schematic of the airport as it was back in 1971. And if you're looking at it from the sky, it shows essentially the two concourses in a Y shape, and the either sides of the Y, and they come down to the main terminal that's in the middle. You can see the Northwest Airlines flights were out of this concourse L right here.
So concourse L, it's right off the main terminal, and back in November of 1971, Flight 305 boarded from gate 52, which is just the second gate down from the concourse from the main terminal. Passengers went to the lower level and then boarded the 727 via the built-in stairs in the rear door of the jet. Same stairs that D.B. Cooper would, you know, a couple hours later actually jump out the back of. Now, Concourse L is gone, but in its place is Concourse C. So the closest spot to the D.B. Cooper gate, if anyone wants to make a pilgrimage, I guess would probably be gate C7. Now, one last question for Kama Simons. Was there any reason that D.B. Cooper chose Portland for his flight into infamy?
Shoot, maybe he lived nearby. I mean, I could put all sorts of guesses out there, but I don't think we really know, do we?
I mean, there must have been some reason. Anyway, so the 727 took off around 3 p.m. It was not long after that the hijacking actually began. Next stop after the short flight from Portland and then a lot of flying around in a holding pattern north of SeaTac was SeaTac Airport, where the plane landed around 5:45 p.m. Now at SeaTac, D.B. Cooper never set foot in the airport. He stayed aboard the 727 while it was refueled and while he waited for the money and parachutes before releasing the passengers. Like Portland's airport, SeaTac has undergone so much construction in the past 50 years, it was a little tough to find the spot where the jet was parked 50 years ago. Fortunately, there's a terrific photo of the plane during the hijacking, taken by a guy named Bruce McKim for the Seattle Times. It shows the 727 sitting on a concrete area with a fence and distinctive building in the distance behind it. It was probably taken from the old outdoor observations at SeaTac that you could still visit as recently as the late 1970s. I remember going there when I was a kid. Now, with help from airport spokesperson Perry Cooper, no relation to D.B. Cooper, he insists, we figured out that the building in the background of the old Seattle Times photo is Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, which is now completely obscured by trees when you stand there at the airport. But I went out to SeaTac and took a drive with Perry Cooper around the tarmac and got as close as we safely could to the D.B. Cooper parking spot at the south end of what's now the center runway.
So what we're understanding is that they would have landed on what is now our center runway and would have come down to the connection between a taxiway in the very end and the tail south end of that runway. So at the time it was 3-4 left or 16 right. And right now it's now the center runway since we've added the new runway to the west.
Yeah, and so the 727 took off again and headed south with Cooper and just a couple of the crew members around 7:40 p.m. There's a few more spots at SeaTac related to the hijacking, though D.B. Cooper didn't set foot there. One's a Northwest Airlines lounge where the passengers and two of the flight attendants were taken by bus once they were released. That lounge was in the B concourse and is long gone. The other spot is Gate A4. That's where Flight 305 was supposed to have unloaded the passengers had there not been a hijacking. And Perry Cooper says, you know, like Portland, there's no plaque there. Gate commemorations are not out of the question, though. They're just limited to non-criminal activities.
Yeah. We have the Sleepless in Seattle gate. We've known that for years.
That
is N7.
I see, I didn't know that.
We actually had a celebration when that closed as well during construction for North Satellite Modernization. And we actually reached out to the film company, and they allowed us to use a photo and stuff of Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks at the time. Of course, they then asked us to hand out the new DVDs, Blu-ray DVDs that they had.
So A4, basically, huh? Bottom line, it'd be really hard to come up with like a national historic site with a Freedom Trail type thing, some sort of a plan. There's just,
yeah,
it's all kind of exists in the mind. You know, it's an amazingly big part of the sort of the folk myths around here, but it just doesn't quite exist anywhere.
Yeah. So when will you yourself launch an expedition into the woods around the Columbia River to try your hand at finding the money?
No, that's too abstract. I like stuff like this where there's actually evidence. I don't like crackpot theories. I mean, I have my own crackpot theories about lots of things. But with D.B. Cooper, there's been just so much. I feel like that's been just thoroughly plowed, that ground. Until they find more evidence somewhere out there in Southwest Washington, I mean, we have to stick with the concrete facts. And that's what I'm focused on, Dave, the concrete facts of history.
Got it. You can find all of Felix's features at MyNorthwest.com. Felix Bunnell, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.